Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.
Sip, savor, and experience 408 sakes and 16 restaurants at the Joy of Sake on September 16th. Go to joyofsake.com for an evening of sake perfection.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening and welcome to Fomen About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. My name is Chris Kuzmi and I'm your co-host through this journey of all things fermented, archived on HeritageRadioNetwork.org and Stitcher and iTunes and other places where good things, tasty things are there for your ears. You'll notice that I'm alone today. My love Mary is off on a business trip, and Rachel is gallivanting around the universe being awesome. And thankfully, we did a bunch of pre-taped interviews at a really, really exciting and really great event that I'll get to in a second. But before we get to that, welcome to the 175th episode. This is the first episode of the fall season 2016, and we are really, really, really excited for this season and the episodes to come. While we were often in our break on this little hiatus, a lot of fun things happened, including a visit from our old friend Charlie Papazian, who founded the Brewers Association and the American Homebrewers Association. It was just such a pleasure to have him in town again. I took him around Long Island City, and we celebrated what is quite a great beer scene in New York City. It was really special to take him around. We went to Greenpoint Beer Nails. We went all throughout LIC to Transmitter, Rockaway, stopped by my future place, Fifth Hammer, had lunch at John Brown's, went to Big Alice and LIC Beer Project, hopped in a car, went down to the future home of Lineup Brewing Company with our friend Katerina Martinez and also Merlin Ward's Wartega and our friend Dave Krako's Arcane Brewing Company. All of this was before we dropped him off at the bottle swap at Bitter and Esther's, and it was a hell of a day, and he is as youthful as ever, and he trooped through it. It was really awesome. Thank you, Charlie Papazian, for making life taste better. Thanks for a great day. So, speaking of Bitter and Esther's, at Bitter and Esther's, Mary is teaching a class, a cider class at Bitter and Esther's on September 21st at 6:30 p.m. The cost is $50 at this cider workshop. She's going to talk about judging ciders. She's going to talk about making ciders, how to approach ciders from all angles, from tasting to making. And it should be a really fun class, and I think you should go if you are in town and able to. Another two other things worthy of note. We have two new breweries in New York City that also happened during the break. Congratulations to Kings County Brewers Collective, and congratulations to Interboro Brewing Company. You guys are making awesome stuff, and we're so happy to have you here. Speaking of here or not here, we took a really great trip. We went to the Boston Fermentation Festival one week ago, last Sunday. It was really, really, really incredible. Not last Sunday, the 28th of August. And it was just such an amazing day. We left at 5 in the morning, got up to Boston about 10 o'clock, And the seminars started around then and went throughout the day. There was a lot of fermented everything, workshops, taste samples. There was a beer garden. And today's show is all about this festival and kind of the people that we met while there. We have a lot of people that were at the festival that will end up being on the show throughout this season, which we're really excited about. But I'm going to introduce these interviews. Not all of them was I part of. Mary and me and Rachel, we all kind of went separate ways depending on what interested us at the time. But first up, these are not in the order of how we recorded them, but they are in order of interest, I believe, because our first interview is with Jeremy Oguski, who is the founder of the Boston Fermentation Festival, member of Boston Ferments, that's bostonferments.com, and also he's a potter and ceramic maker from Oguski Ceramics and Design Studio. You can go to claycrocks.com to find him, but here is him in his words.
So we're here at the Boston Fermentation Festival with the man who started it all. Tell us your name.
Hey, fun man about it. Jeremy Oguski.
Yes.
You also make pottery and ceramics and stuff for fermenting in, but you have fermented this in this entire festival. You're behind Boston Ferments. Tell us about it all. How did you get into this? What is this? Who are you? We're happy to be here, and thank you for an amazing day.
Oh, well, thank you guys for coming. I mean, that's awesome that you guys came up from New York to participate, help out, and, like, appreciate it. That's really why I organized the event a few years ago. It was just a few friends that all loved to ferment, and we just got together, and we said, you know, let's celebrate fermentation, and pulled together. The first year, we really bootstrapped it, so, you know, we just got together a bunch of friends and fermenters that we know, and we said, let's have a big party. And it's really grown organically since then.
What was it like that first year? How many people were there, and compare that to today?
Yeah, I think the first year was maybe a few hundred people, but hardcore fermenters, you know, people really came out. But it was self-financed. You know, I put in a lot of money, whereas this is the first year that actually I'm paid to organize the festival. So that's huge.
Awesome. Congratulations. Yeah.
That's a huge difference. That it made it sustainable for me to continue.
Who paid you?
Who are the sponsors?
That's like a very good question. We have some very generous sponsors. So our two lead sponsors are Mother Dirt, which was in the Science Corner. They were telling people about their alternative soap spray that encourages a healthy microbiome on their skin. And Ginkgo Bioworks, another company that creates products based on fermentation. They're both, you know, science-based small companies. And we had tons of other, in addition to them, small companies like Chi Kimchi and Real Pickles and all your local kind of like small fermenters that were super generous. You know, they gave us money to put on a totally free festival.
Well, I think that's the cool thing about this fermentation festival is that you have a lot of different areas. You had the Science Corner, you had seminars all day long. You had a beer garden, vendors, like a lot of stuff going on. And in this amazing Boston Public Market, which has a lot of fermented food anyway.
The programming was great. The location was great. I mean, we were never bored or uninterested in the happenings of
the day. We were torn between, like, should we go interview this guy or should we go to this seminar? Should we eat this thing? Like, yeah.
Thank you. I mean, I think there's so many people that are interested in fermentation, and there's so many people doing really creative stuff. So, you know, when I would reach out to people and say, hey, do you want to participate? Do you want to be involved? People would reach out to me. Like, it's almost like you kind of create the idea, and then people just kind of come. They self-assemble. They self-organize.
If you build it, they will come.
Somewhat. I mean, it's a lot of organizing.
Yeah, yeah.
Still a lot of work.
To that regard, how early do you start on organizing next year's festival? Or are we already in the planet? We are already in the planet.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, already I'm thinking about, you know, what would make good workshops next year? What are good sort of new concepts? Like this year we did an arts and fermentation section, which I think went somewhat successful. But I'm thinking, like, how do we do it more successfully next year? I think this was the first year we did a pickle picnic that actually was pretty successful, whereas last year no one came to the picnic. It was totally empty. Kind of sad. It was
they
empty
went to the
picnic.
Pickle picnic.
Yeah, it was the pickle picnic.
So it was empty, right? Like, do you remember how few people there were?
Today.
Oh, today. All right.
I went to it last year, and it was empty. And I was like, where's this picnic? And I'm looking at the map, and there's no pickles. And then, yeah.
We continued with it. We persevered. And I think this year, I didn't actually make it to the picnic. I wasn't able to go over there, but I heard it was really good.
Also, the culture swap was awesome, and the fermentation.
The help desk was really a hit. When I was working, it was like nonstop, like all kinds of questions from, you know, I'm making my own koji and something's wrong, to, you know, basic, you know, how I know my sauerkraut's ready, to, you know, kefir questions.
Who's talking?
Yeah, so for the listeners who may not recognize the voice, or maybe do, we have with us Cheryl Passwater, who was also volunteering at the Fermentation Festival at the Fermentation Help Desk. Do you want to explain to us what the Fermentation Help Desk was?
It's just a little drop-in site where people can swing through, ask all your fermentation questions to different fermentation experts. So it was quite the diversity of questions, from more expert fermenters to newer fermenters or people just getting started. It was really, I feel like there's a huge diversity of people who came through.
Yeah. That's needed, because a lot, I feel like, I mean, what we get
is... It can
be
daunting. And
yeah, and people have, like, really basic questions where, you know, they've done something and they're like, oh, wait, what went wrong here? Or, you know, so that's cool that you guys have that.
Did you have that before? Or
we did, and it was kind of similar to the pickle picnic, where it wasn't so successful last year.
Oh, no, definitely. Every time we walked by,
yeah,
there was, like, a line of people.
That's great.
Yeah. I talked nonstop to people, answered questions. I think, too, it's, like, it's really good because you get a lot of people who they're unsure about fermentation, and then it's, like, you just have to stand there and be like, no, you just need to trust your instincts, and but here's also some basic things. And the minute you tell them, so they're like, oh, I feel better, and I feel like I can go back and check on my thing. And I spent half an hour talking to some girl about who's trying to actually incubate her own koji right now, and you know, she was like, my boyfriend's at home babysitting the koji incubating, and she's like, but here's the problem, and she's showing me all these pictures on her iPhone, and I was like, okay, we need to fix this, we need to tweak this, let's try that, and then the next round do this. And she was like writing down like copious notes, and yeah, it was really fun.
I think that's kind of the point of the festival, really, just to get everyone together and make connections between fermenters. You know, there's like so much knowledge out there, and people don't necessarily meet each other, they don't know each other, and so how do we create ways, how do we create a picnic where people are comfortable to sit together, to learn from each other, and just build community?
Speaking of building and fermenters, you make pottery and you make crocks. Is that your day gig? Is that what you do throughout the year? And how do we find out more information, and how do we get a crock from you?
That's a good question. So I'm a potter full time. I'm a fermenter, you know, in my spare time, and I make fermentation crocks. And that's, you know, I have been fermenting for many years. And people ask me how I got into fermentation. It's like I've actually always enjoyed fermented flavors. I love beer. I love cheeses. I love sour flavors. But I never knew them as fermented until a friend told me about 5 years ago. And that kind of a light bulb went on. And so I'm a potter, so I started making fermentation vessels. And it's just as the fermentation movement has really picked up, my interest for my fermentation crocks has really grown. So that's a good part of my business now, selling them. So I sold a ton. My intern was just like clearing out all the crocks at the festival today.
So where do people learn more about your crocks?
They can go to my website, which is claycrocks.com. Yeah.
Don't make sure you spell that correctly, otherwise you'll find yourself in a really weird place.
That's right.
So, what are some hopes that you have for the future of the Boston Fermentation Festival?
I'd love to find creative ways to bring out new fermenters. I mean, there's a lot of people that are interested in fermentation that don't think of themselves as fermenters. A lot of cheese makers, a lot of like koji and pickle makers, and you know, that aren't part of the fold. There's a lot of communities around Boston that are fermenting. I mean, every community ferments in some way. And so how do we involve not just people like me, like white, you know, folks that are interested in pickle making, but like how do I bring out, you know, the Korean community,
yes,
or, you know, other people that are doing it but not interested in coming to a kraut mob or a fermentation festival. And so that's part of the reason why we moved downtown, because it's like a more diverse kind of cross-section of people. Definitely more accessible. And how do we kind of access the right language, the right, like, kind of the right ways of speaking to people? Maybe people don't think about it as fermentation. Maybe they think about it as pickling, or they think about it as just, like, a way to their grandmother or their, you know, someone preserved a bunch of vegetables. So how do we kind of bring those people into the fold in a way?
Crossing into health and wellness too. There's a lot of, you know, that integration happening in like the autism community, and you know, it's interesting seeing like all these like pockets and trying to sort of connect the dots.
Yeah, I think it's a great, you know, fermentation is a great window into all these other issues. So it's great when we can pull together microbiologists and picklers and brewers and doctors and put them in the same room and have them talk to each other, basically.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So Boston Fermentation Festival, what's the website?
It's bostonferments.com. And, yeah.
We're sorry you missed 2016, but you should look for 2017.
That's right.
See you next year. Ferment about it.
Great, great, great times. Thank you, Jeremy. So awesome. I mean, it was, yeah, the connections made and the people approaching fermentation from so many different angles was just awesome, awesome to see. Fermentation is, I mean, I always say fermentation is another word for magic. You know what I'm saying? We had a really great time. And this, you know, this next guest is kind of insane. One of my favorite things that happened was, this guy, Joshua Pablo Rosenstock. He's a bassist. He's a fermenter. He's the inventor of the Fermentaphone. He's going to tell you a little bit about it, but I'm going to tell you a little bit about him. He's a multimedia artist, musician, and educator currently based in Somerville, Massachusetts. His work playfully explores the relationship between... I'm reading this from his website, by the way. His work, which is joshuarosenstock.com. His work playfully explores the relationships between humans, technology, and the natural world. He uses an ever-expanding repertoire of analog, digital, and craft techniques to create dynamic, intermedia works that incorporate moving images, sound, sculptural installation, and interactive performance. And I'll talk a little bit more about what I experienced here, but here's him in his words.
Yeah, so we're here at the Boston Fermentation Festival in Boston, Massachusetts, and I am looking at something called a fermentaphone. And with me is its creator and brewer, I guess.
Hi there, I'm Joshua Pablo Rosenstock, and I am the brewer and creator of the Fermentaphone. The Fermentaphone is a musical instrument that is being performed as we speak. You might hear it in the background. It's being performed by live cultures of bacteria and yeast in a whole variety of different fermented foods and drinks. We have some pickles, some beer, wine, other mysterious kinds of beverages, all kinds of stuff. And as they are fermenting, the bacteria and yeast that live in there are producing carbon dioxide bubbles. And my system that I created here sort of listens to the sound of those microbial burps and farts, if you will, and turns that into music.
All right, this is amazing.
It's really cool. There's this like tone in the back that's kind of like a chime, and I think I can see which one it is.
Yeah, if you look closely, you'll see as those bubbles come out, there are little underwater microphones that pick that sound up, and you can really, it's, you know, there's a little background noise here, but if you look closely, you can really see the relationship between the fermenting bubbles and the sounds that you're hearing.
Can you take us through some of these ferments?
Because yeah, definitely. A lot of them have a kind of a backstory to them.
Okay.
So
intrigues us the most, I think, is this blueberry pruno, which you spelled P-R-U-N-E-A-U-X. We actually just did an episode on pruno.
So good. You're the first people that I've met today who are familiar with pruno, so I've been waiting for you to come along. It's a special in-joke reserved just for you and perhaps your listeners. So pruno, as I'm sure you guys know, but for those that don't, is a beverage that is brewed mostly by prisoners. And in prison, you know, you don't have a lot of stuff to work with, but it turns out that you can ferment really easily. And as I understand it, pruno is usually brewed in garbage bags, is what you've heard too?
Yeah.
Back of the toilet, yeah. Oh, okay, yeah. So, and basically the idea is you could take anything, I mean, orange juice or soda or prunes, and with a little microbial action, it'll start fermenting and it turn into something that may not taste fantastic, but will still get you feeling good. So this, it's actually, I don't know if you can tell, but it's actually, quote, blueberry pruno. So this is actually made with artificially blueberry flavored, some kind of beverage. I think it might be Snapple or something like that.
So
yeah, so, you know, corn syrup, some artificial flavors and colors, but that's sort of a counterpoint to. So over here we have the ghostly manischewitz, which is kind of the other end of the spectrum. So that's made with grapes that I grew in my backyard. So Somerville grapes. It doesn't get any more locavore than that. So that's kind of the counterpart to the highly processed blueberry pruno. Yeah. Now that's really interesting. The five-fingered bisop. So bisop is a West African term for hibiscus. So this is a hibiscus mead. And I was at Market Basket the other day, and I was buying my starfruits, and there was a Haitian woman in line behind me. And she said, we had a whole conversation about starfruit, and she said, in Haiti, we call it five fingers. I really like that, so I decided I would name the starfruit beverage after that.
Starfruit floating in it.
Yeah. And then this one over here, this is my Harvest Moon Pickles. That one you really have to see to appreciate, but I was trying to create something that was really like a piece of fermentation art. It's very layered and colorful.
For listeners, that is there's a bunch of colored layers of, I think, radishes, and is that broccoli?
So there's some Savoy cabbage at the bottom. Savoy. That's that really wrinkly cabbage. Yeah. And daikon radish. And there's some purple cabbage at the top, too, that's giving it that beautiful.
So where can people find it? Sand art.
Oh, I'm so glad you asked. So my website is joshuarosenstock.com, or you can always just Google Fermentaphone. As far as I'm aware, there's only one Fermentaphone in the world. And today it's here at the Boston Public Market for the Fermentation Fest.
Do you specifically calibrate them to specific keys or notes, or is it just kind of like pick one and see how it goes?
Yeah, so each one has its own sort of musical behavior. So over here, the Ghostly Manischewitz is our bass player right now, and that one it goes over the computer, and there's a sort of a little compositional program that's making some decisions about the kind of notes that it should play. So I'm actually a bass player myself, so I have a lot of thoughts about what is appropriate kind of sounds for a bass to play. So, and then over here, this is over here, like the American wheat beer is playing kind of more of a melody part, so it has a different sort of program that suggests certain notes that it plays that are more melodic. And today's melody actually is loosely based on the melody for Yankee Doodle, which I thought was sort of appropriate considering our location. So if you listen closely, you may hear something sort of reminiscent to Yankee Doodle, although I've translated it to a minor key.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you guys so much.
Yeah, cheers.
Yankee Doodle went to town. so cool. Very fun. This was insane. I strongly encourage you to Google the Flutophone. I mean, Flutophone too. That's an old band of mine. But the Fermentophone. Fermentophone. Ophone. So Fermentophone. It's really fun. So basically what was going on is on the top of his fermenters, at his airlocks, he had triggers that were going straight to his computer. And in his computer, he basically, through a MIDI thing, assigned everybody a different role. Each fermenter had a different role and different sounds. He just talked about it, but it was really cool and really fun. And so that changes per event he does or other things. I saw a couple videos of the Flutophone with just really the eight notes of a scale with different voices doing it, and it was pretty fun. And it was just such a great, for me, a really neat way to experience music and be connected to music. It's out of your hands, but you just have to accept what's going on. I'd love to play a duet with this on saxophone. Anyway, we're going to take a really quick break and come back with some other people we met along our ride.
Joy of Sake invites you to the largest and liveliest sake tasting event in New York. With over 400 premium sakes to taste, including gold and silver award winners from the U.S. National Sake Appraisal and 16 of New York's top restaurants providing sake-licious appetizers. The event takes place on Friday, September 16th from 6:30 to 9:30 at the Metropolitan Pavilion on 18th Street. You'll be able to sip, savor, and experience a record 408 premium sakes, all in peak condition, with over half of them unavailable in the U.S. and exclusively for the Joy of Sake. All categories of sake will be represented, with over half from the elite Daiginjo sakes. Plus, nibble on sake-inspired appetizers, all carefully curated and perfectly paired with two creative poke stations by Narita and Sakamai, plus elegantly crafted appetizers from Sushi Nakazawa, Sakagura, Zuma, and more. Celebrate the world's finest sakes in an evening of sake perfection at the Joy of Sake. For more information, go to joyofsake.com.
well. Welcome back to episode 175, the first episode of Men About It in the fall 2016 series. We are going through a series of interviews from people that we met at the Boston Fermentation Festival. Some of them we've met before, but this is the first chance we've had to get down and talk to them. When we showed up at this festival in the morning, first we were welcomed with a presentation by Adam Elabd on Mexican ferments, and that was really fun, really great. We're going to have him on the show later this season. But the second seminar that happened was from Jeffrey Yoskowitz, who's a co-founder and chief pickler at the Gefilteria. And him and his partner, Liz Alpern, just wrote a book called The Gefilte Manifesto, New Recipes for Old World Jewish Foods. So the Gefilteria is a new kind of food venture that launched in 2012 with the mission of reimagining Eastern European Jewish cuisine, adapting classic dishes to the values and tastes of a new generation. Here's a little of Jeff.
Jeffrey Yoskowitz.
Okay, and so you just gave a panel on, can you tell us a little bit about the lecture you just gave and what it was called?
It was on the role of fermented pickles and sour tonics in Jewish foods, and the talk was really about, for me, it's a personal discovery of how I learned to understand my own food tradition by understanding the role that the pickle plays, and then fermented tonics as well play in creating, I don't know, the flavors and the nutritional benefits of seasonal eating. So for me, it's kind of a talk that told that story, and also we made dill pickles, and I gave some tips that I've picked up along the way that I use when I make my own sour garlic dill pickles. That's what it was about.
What are some of those tips?
So one of the things I picked up when I was in Sweden was people always use ice water baths when they have a lot of ice, I imagine, up in Scandinavia, and they like to firm up the cucumbers before they ferment them. And for me, I found, you know, especially when I'm fermenting in the summertime in like my hot New York kitchen, I find that the ice water bath is really helpful. Other thing is just small cucumbers, small vegetables. Whenever you're pickling, you just don't want to have too much, too watery of a vegetable. You know, the fresher the better. And other tip, I guess, would be, you know, some of the kind of basics. Usually, you have a tannin-rich vegetable that's going to kind of counteract the pectinase or the enzyme that softens your cucumbers when you're making pickles. And so I like to use bay leaves or oak leaves. But one tip I learned from Polish women who pickle in Krakow was that horseradish leaves and currant leaves are actually the best.
Okay, so you also spoke a bit about how probiotics play their role in this culture. So can you talk about that?
Yeah, I'm particularly interested. For me, I grew up in eating at Jewish delis all the time, and I would eat like a pickle with a corned beef or pastrami sandwich. I never understood until I understood probiotic and live-cultured foods that, oh, those help me digest the fatty pastrami sandwich. And in fact, there was a wisdom to the pairing of those two together. And it's beyond flavor. I mean, there is, of course, those acidic acids and then these fermented foods, they cleanse your palate bite to bite. So they actually help you enjoy that meat, that pastrami sandwich bite to bite in a different kind of way. But the probiotics are going to help me fortify my stomach. They're going to help my digestive system work through the wintry, fatty, starchy meals that invariably I'm going to be eating come December, come January, especially if I were living in Eastern Europe, but equally as relevant to me in New York City.
Can you talk a little bit about your philosophy about making pickles?
Yeah, I think people get so caught up in having everything be so right and so precise. And for me, this is something that was always done by, you know, I don't know, it wasn't done so, I don't know, so measured. I feel like there was a lot of experimentation, a lot of, this year we have extra turnips, let's throw it in there. There was a lot of kind of improvisation that I feel like when people are pickling, they get really caught up in doing everything right and being so precise that people don't always enjoy it. And for me, it's about having fun. Pickling is, and when making sauerkrauts, even making beverages, it's trying things out. It may not work out. It might not taste good if someone was suggesting putting in particular kind of very, very kind of hot Asian spices into this garlic dill pickle. But to me, it's like, hey, try it. If it doesn't work out, so what? You know, then you compost it and you start again. You know, and I think it's important to keep that mindset. I like to think about
I also don't like to, I don't like when it's too, I don't want to have to like heat my vegetables before, and I don't want to do all those things. Like, I want to imagine I'm in the field and I'm just packing a barrel like my ancestors would have done, you know, in the fields. So for me, that's sort of my philosophy.
Want to promote your book or your business or anything?
Sure. The book is The Gefilte Manifesto, New Recipes for Old World Jewish Foods. It's coming out September 13th. So this is the first event where it's actually in public, which is really exciting. And no worries. There's a whole chapter on pickling. There's a chapter on beverages, which have recipes for kvass and kombucha, but really it's about Eastern European Jewish food traditions, and it's a narrative cookbook, so it both tells the stories and provides recipes for sort of how to reach back, look towards Eastern Europe, and so I'm not being as clear as I want to be, but as a way of telling the story of this food tradition in a more holistic way.
Jeffrey was awesome. His talk was awesome. It was inspiring, and it was like, it was non-intimidating. Like, if you're afraid of pickling, really, like, what he really, you know, he's a fantastic teacher. He's very just uplifting, and it's really like there, you can't go wrong as long as we're making it safe. And of course, you know, if it's black or red, you stay away from that. But the, you know, we talked a little bit in his talk about the salinity in the brines, and how he prefers a 2% versus a 5%. You're still getting things, you're still getting your crunch, but it's just not as salty. And so when you're thinking of it in these flavor places, it's great. And but also you talked about waste not, want not. And you talked about watermelon rinds. And of course, it's the end of summer, and you know, we had friends with a lot of watermelons. So we took all these watermelon rinds after this when we got back. Actually, a week ago, we have them pickling right now. I think they're ready to be, they're pickled, they're delicious. We just took some watermelons, threw them in a 2% brine with some chili peppers, some ginger, and some black pepper. And man, they're awesome. They're awesome. I wasn't really craving pickled watermelon rinds prior to this talk, and it was just really great. We're going to have him on the show at some point this season, hopefully, because he really is really entertaining and engaging, and just a fantastic, fantastic bloke. Next up, we run into Matt Skobrak of Bentley Brewing.
We're here at the Boston Fermentation Festival in Hopster's Alley, which is the beer and cider and liquor store in the Boston Public Market. And we came across Matt Skobrak from Bentley Brewing Company, has been doing a tasting. Lo and behold, we have a friend in common, a New York City friend in common. But you're doing great beer, so talk about your setup. Well, first of all, tell us where you are.
Yeah, so we're in Southbridge, Mass., which is about 20 minutes west of Worcester, right on the Connecticut border. All of us at the brewery, we live in Connecticut, so we kind of, you know, we're hop skipping a jump from over the border. We've been around for the past 3 years now, and we just started taking our production really seriously because, you know, we do sour beers, so it takes 2 years sometimes for our beers to release. And right now we're all having our little glasses, we're tasting Farmhands, which is our barrel-aged sour red ale blended with the rye saison. That's our summer seasonal.
And you're a true nano brewery, I guess.
Yeah, we are absolutely tiny. We do 10 barrels of sour beer every season. So, I mean, that's 300 cases of beer, or 300 gallons, sorry, of beer every 3 months. And then once a week, we do our one-barrel IPAs. So right now we have Half Nelson, which is our one of our flagship beers. It's a Nelson Sauvin Pale Ale. It's all hot bursted with Nelson Sauvin, Citra, Simcoe, and whole melon. There's no bittering at all. It's just an obscene amount of hops.
Like 10 minutes, 5 minutes, 0 minutes.
Basically at the very, very end.
All at the end.
She throws an obscene amount of hops in. My girlfriend, Calla, she's the brewer there. She runs a small batch system. And her cousin, Adam, runs the large system doing the sours. And I do the sales and distribution for the brewery, so I'm on the road selling it, which is a lot of fun. My girlfriend brews the beer, and then I hit the road and I sell it, and... You know, right now our beer has been so popular that it's all pre-ordered for the next 6 weeks. So, yeah, it's absolutely crazy.
What size system is it? What size batch do you every time?
One barrel.
Straight up one barrel.
It's a straight up, tiny batch. Yeah. And then we bottle it. It comes to, you know, about 30 cases-ish. And we do it everything in the 500 half-liter bottles. Yep.
Except the barley wine.
The barley wine
is $7.50, right?
Yeah, so the barley wine was our first foray into sour beers. It was a collaboration with Black Pond Brewing and Danielson. Danielson, Connecticut. I'm sorry, I forgot you're out.
We're New Yorkers.
You're New Yorkers, yeah. So Danielson, Connecticut. They're good friends of ours. You know, if you're out that way, tell them I said hi. Yeah, so that was a barrel-aged sour barley wine, and it was aged in Jack Daniel's barrels that we got secondhand from Wormtown Brewery, and they're in Worcester. Actually, the brewer was hanging out. We chatted for a while out here, and he was really stoked to see what we did with those barrels that he gave us. Yeah, so it was a barrel-aged sour barley wine. And we released that every 6 months for the past 2 years now. So the first batch was in barrel for 6 months.
And you inoculated the barrel.
Yeah. So we soured out. We got this really, really cool house culture that we've been nurturing for the past about two years now, I would say, at this point. And there's like those four bottles on the shelf right now are probably the last four bottles in the state.
We're bringing one home with us.
Let me know what you think, because that's a special beer. It's 11.5%, but if I had you blindfolded, you would not know it's 11.5%. It is a dangerous beer. Funny story, when we were bottling it, we were pouring ourselves full pints because it was, you know, we got there at, you know, 8 in the morning at the brewery and we were bottling it. We're like, we got to make sure it tastes good. So we're pouring ourselves full pints. At lunchtime, we're like, we got to take a break because this beer, we forgot it was 11.5%. It was awesome. Then when we released the third release of that, we took those barrels and filled them with a red ale. And that has been aging, that aged in the barrels for 6 months. And then blended that with a rye saison. And that rye saison was our spring seasonal. So we kind of, everything's seasonally, so we actually took that spring seasonal, blended it with the barrel-aged sour red, and that's Farmhand, which all of us have in our glasses here. It's such a fun beer. We just released that 6 weeks ago, and there's not a lot of it kicking around.
I feel like it's a big privilege to taste. You guys work on such a small scale. Like, delicious, you know, delicious liquid, and it's super exciting to taste it. So.
Yeah. And it's all, you know, it's all word of mouth, too. I mean, we're so small, such small scale that, you know, anytime I'm doing a tasting or I'm at a package store or, you know, a bar that carries our stuff, I'm like, do you know anybody else that would be interested in this? And they go, yeah, two blocks up, take a right, go talk to Dave. And I'm like, hey, Dave, you know, this guy sent me over here. You want to carry our beer, too? And that's how I do all of my business. I don't, like, cold call anybody. You know, I don't pressure anybody. You know, we're so small that, like, if you want to carry our beer, you can. If you don't, somebody else will, you know? Like, it's such small production that, you know, I don't have to fight for shelf space, you know? I'm like, I've got beer. If you guys want to carry it, you can, because there's only so much to go around, you know?
So tell us about the flat red.
Oh, okay, yeah, so...
we do all fermentations on the show.
Cool. Yeah, that's actually... I'm doing an article in Connecticut Food and Farm magazine. So I own a farm as well, a little one-acre market garden. I sell to fine dining restaurants out in Connecticut. A couple of restaurants in Boston have been carrying some stuff from us too, which is it's fun. It helps us, like, split our time, you know what I mean? Like, instead of getting burnt out at the brewery and, you know, it is beer, but if you're doing it day in and day out for 12 hours a day, you can kind of get burnt out doing it. Same with if you own a farm, day in and day out, you end up getting burnt out with it. So Calla and I both kind of divide our time between the farm and the brewery, and it's, you know, great for our mental health as well as our, you know, our actual health too, you know. And so one of the things that I was a chef. I went to school in Vermont. And that's like, you're immersed in beer culture in Vermont, you know what I mean? You're immersed in food culture. Every farm, every restaurant out there is a farm-to-table restaurant, you know? And I was the chef at a little farm-to-table restaurant called Salt Cafe. And one of the things that I would do, I would take some sour beer and take the dregs of it and throw that into rye flour and add a little bit of water to kind of kickstart a sourdough. And I found that it makes a really unique flatbread. So what I would do is basically equal parts sour beer, or the dregs of sour beer, or, you know, just straight up sour beer.
Non-pasteurized,
of course. You have to have the live culture in the bottle for it to work. Otherwise, if you use a pasteurized beer, you might get some of the flavor, but you're not getting the full effect. So you just take a ball jar, take one cup of sour beer, one cup of rye flour, and then one packet of regular bread yeast, you know, regular store-bought bread yeast. Throw that into a ball jar, give it a shake or a stir, let it sit for overnight. Then you take that, 2 cups of bread flour, throw it in a stand mixer, mix, 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 done. You've got a sour beer, you've got a sour bread, sourdough flatbread that tastes like it took 2, 3 weeks, 6 months to culture the sour, you know, that sour culture. Overnight. It's a sponge. It's a sour sponge overnight. It's such a shortcut, and it's actually a really, really old technique. I got the idea from researching, so kind of a little backtrack. You can edit this in post. The restaurant, when you walked in, it was like dining in the owner's library. She took all of her books about food. I took all of my books about food, and we covered the shelf, covered the walls full of books about food. So there was historic foodways. We kind of had it in sections. And I was reading some of the historic foodways books, and one of them, one of the things that I kept coming across was, it was called barm. So, you know, they would call for a certain amount of barm, like, you know, 1 cup of barm, 1 pound of barm. And I was like, what the hell is barm? Like, what is this? Because they wouldn't explain what it is. It was just like, yeah, it was just like in that time you were expected to know what barm was, because it was like you didn't go to the store and get a packet of yeast. You know, the brewer, the baker would go to the brewery and get, you know, the dregs, or they would get spent yeast. What's the term for when a beer is brewing and you got that
Krausen.
The Krausen? So they would take Krausen. And they would, you know, add Krausen they would make a slurry with Krausen and flour. And that was called barm. So it took me a little bit to do some research to figure out what are these guys talking about when they keep saying barm, 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 barm. And it turns out they take Krausen and add that to flour and make a slurry to kickstart their sourdough. And I kind of took that idea and ran with it. And I was like, you know, like, a sour beer's already got, you know, all the lacto, it's got all the PDO, it's got all the Brett, it's got all of those flavors in there that you get from sourdough over the course of weeks to actually nurture that. So I say, why don't I just take a sour beer already, throw that in there, and kind of do that barm technique. I'm making air quotes, you can't see me right now, but I'm making air quotes, barm, and do a sour barm. And it worked out really, really well. And it's so stupid easy. Like, you can do it in your... Literally, you can make a sourdough in your sleep. Like, before you go to sleep, take that 1 cup to equal parts, you know, rye flour, sour beer, 1 packet of bread yeast, stir it up, let it sit. Next day, you know, make your flatbreads, done.
I think it'd be important to note that if you're buying sour beer in the store, or if you're doing this with store-bought sour beer, that you make sure it hasn't been pasteurized.
Yeah,
so, like, you know, it's got to be live, yeah.
Yeah, it has to be a live beer. And, you know, I made it using Farmhand, which is our sour red, and it worked out so well.
The other thing is, actually, it brings up a good point, because the other thing is that some of the sour breweries will actually filter and then re-yeast in the bottle with, like, a neutral champagne yeast. So you want to make sure that you get, you know...
Make sure you still got the funky stuff.
And, you know, local is better, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's been times where I've literally taken a dip tube and dipped it in our barrels... And use that. I do it every New Year's. We throw a huge New Year's party on our farm, and every New Year's I, you know, take a dip tube and, you know, make a multiple size batch, you know, 5 times batch, and make a ton of flatbreads and, you know, straight from the barrel sour beer culture flatbread. It's sour beer sponge, I guess.
Yeah, that's awesome. So
if people want to
find out more about Bentley Brewing Company, where do they do so? Do you guys have a Facebook page, website?
We've got all the social medias, you know, all the social, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Bentley Brewing Company at Gmail, if you want to look that up, bentleybrewingcompany.com. My farm's called the Tiny Acre Farm in Woodstock. The Tiny Acre, yeah, we're a little 1 acre market garden.
That's amazing. You like the power of one. You got 1 barrel, 1 acre.
1 barrel, 1 acre. Yeah, 1 barrel, 1 acre, 1 brewer. Yeah, it's a lot of fun, man. It's very, you know, it's very like word of mouth, very, you know, it's kind of an underground little beer market and vegetable market that we got going on. It's fun.
Well, thank you so much.
Hey,
it was such a pleasure talking to you and tasting your beer.
Thank you so much.
Matt, thanks. Good luck.
Yeah. Cheers. Yeah. Cheers, guys.
Clement about.
Yeah, cheers. A lot of people
That's right. If you can make liquid bread, you can make bread with your sour liquid bread starters. Krausen. Bomb. Bentleybrewing.com. Bentley ShipBrewing.com. Next up, for our last hold, I'm not playing all of the clips that we got from the day. It was a lot of stuff and a lot of fun. But for our final little run, they had a little sour beer pavilion there right across from the Pickle Park that that Jeremy was speaking about earlier, or Pickle Picnic. And we met up with our friend Doug Schmidt, a home brewer, who shared some of his home brews, and Rachel brought up some cider. And then we met Paul Nixon of Independent Fermentations. As soon as this is over, I'm going to bid adieu. Happy Monday, and we look forward to sharing the rest of this season with you. Next up, Doug Schmidt and Paul Nixon.
So we also have an impromptu homebrewing tasting going on at the Boston Fermentation Festival. So here we have
Doug Schmidt.
And where are you from?
Swampscott, Massachusetts.
And what have you got for us?
I brought a Zima.
Zima
with an S. Yep, just it's got basically fruit juice and sugar, and I fermented it with some champagne yeast. It goes really quick. It's about a 2-day ferment. Ferments down to just about nothing, and then put some raisins in there. You bottle it with 3 to 4 raisins, let the raisins float to the top, then you know it's ready, put in the fridge, and then you know it's ready to go. It's only about less 1% alcohol or less.
Yeah. Crushable, great for summer weather.
Oh yeah, that's quite
summery.
Use it as a mixer for something with something else, or just drink it as an easy drinker.
Cheers, thank you. Doug.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah,
totally. Tequila maybe?
Yeah. Oh yeah, it'll go well, tequila.
I say they wrote a lot of things.
And I brought the cider I've been making. I bottled 2 bottles for the festival because I didn't know what kind of a festival this was, if it was a sharing thing or whatever. So this is a cider that I pressed myself with. It's got mulberry juice in it, and also I added glitter sugar to.
You added glitter?
I added glitter sugar.
Glitter sugar.
Yeah, we'll see. So I only bottled this 2 days ago, so I don't know how carbonated it is.
Or just
no.
Sugar drops?
Yeah. I don't see it. You can't see the glitter sugar.
Yeah, that's disappointing. But it's a black cider. Okay. Yeah, it's uncarbonated, unfortunately. Oh, well. That's why I only bottled a couple. Let's see how it is.
Mulberry juice?
Mulberry juice. I got it from the store. It was on sale.
It'd be nice sparkling, but it is
really
nice.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's not champagne yeast.
It is not champagne yeast. I use beer yeast.
Who does? Oh, inside? Sure.
Nope.
Yeah.
It definitely needs to be carbonated. I gotta wait for the other couple of days.
And carbonated? You didn't.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All right.
So who just said that?
Yeah.
Introduce
yourself.
Who said
Paul
that?
From
Hey, I'm Paul. I'm one of the owners of Independent Fermentations in Plymouth, Massachusetts. My girlfriend Rose here is the other owner. And we've been serving beers here all day to the fine folks at the Fermentation Festival in Boston. It's been a great day.
And they've been delicious.
Thank you very much.
You brought I had the Beer Terrain Saison earlier, so tell us a little bit about that beer.
Yeah, that's probably the most unique beer that we brought today. It's a Saison. It's brewed with some lemon balm and rosemary, both from our backyard garden. It's a collaboration brew with Jonathan Cook of Homefield Brewing, and he's also the author of the book Beer Terrain, which is why we named the beer terrain. So a collaboration. This is actually the second batch we did with this one. Pretty unique combination, I think, of herbs to add into a Saison. And we keep it pretty well restrained. You know, I don't want anyone to say, oh, that's rosemary, or oh, that's lemon balm right away. I want the sort of subtleties just in the background. I still want it to taste like beer.
So tell us a little bit about your brewery.
So we're a small brewery in Plymouth, Mass., as I think I said, and about 500 barrels a year capacity. We started in our barn in the south end of Plymouth at our house. It's about 500 square feet, and in the basement of the barn. We had a capacity of close to maybe 100 barrels per year in there. Really, literally low overhead with about an 8-foot ceiling, so we couldn't fit very much equipment in there. But we did a pretty good job for the first year and a half, and then in October we moved to an industrial space in Plymouth where we could actually add a tap room and more fermentation capacity. Same brew house, it's about a 2.5 barrel brew house, but we have enough spare kettles that we can kind of call it a 5 barrel system with just a little bit of a delay. So we mash once, boil, mash twice, boil in about 7 hours or something like that. So very small. No, it's actually on propane. I think our next iteration, I'll be seriously looking at an electric system because the propane is pretty expensive. No natural gas service where we are. The other difficulty we have is that we're on a septic system. Our next door neighbor is actually the town sewer plant, sewer treatment plant, but we're not hooked up. Nobody in our street is. So yeah, we're on a septic system on propane. It's too small, but we love it.
Still making good stuff out of it.
And you guys have plans for other things.
Yeah, so we in May started leasing another space in our building, so basically doubling our footprint. Unfortunately, there is another tenant in between us, so we're not too contiguous spaces, but we're going to use the new space as a homebrew supply and fermentation supply shop and studio. So we'll do all kinds of classes and things. The things we're learning here today are certainly a big help, making some contacts with people who know all kinds of stuff about fermentation. So we'll have some of these people come down to give lectures and stuff. So you'll be able to get homebrew, home wine making, cider making supplies, as well as pickling and cheeses and everything else fermented. So all sorts of fermented food products. We'll have everything you need, plus do classes and lectures and all kinds of stuff like that as well. So it'll be 127 Camelot Drive in Plymouth, Mass., 02360.
Yes. Will that be under the same name, Independent Fermentations?
The corporate name is going to stay the same because I don't want to pay another $500 for filing another LLC. But people will see the name Independent Fermentations Brewing for the brewery and Independent Fermentation Supply for the homebrew supply shop.
Do you yourself do any other fermentations?
Yeah, we do wild fermentations for beer. I'm mostly focused on the brewing side of things. So we do a wild fermentation with wild blueberry yeast from the local state forest. So I culture up the yeast from the blueberry skins and make a beer with that every year. This will be, I think, including homebrew year, is probably the fourth or fifth year that we've done that. Comes out really nice, wild fermentation, a little funky, sometimes a little sour. We also are working on like kimchi recipes and stuff like that. We're going to be more focused on the supplies. I mean, you can probably buy a couple of things from us in the store fermented, but it'll be more for people to do it themselves.
Yeah, very cool. So where can people find more about you?
We're independentfermentations.com. That's the website. I really hit the Facebook page a couple times a week with more updates than the website, and that's facebook.com/indiefirm, IndieFerm. And then there's also the Twitter that I use infrequently, and that's also Indie Firm as well. And that's pretty much the best place to look for information on us.
Cool. Well, it was a pleasure tasting your beer.
Yeah, come on down. We're open Thursdays through Sundays in the tap room. So the next time you're back in Massachusetts, definitely seek us out, and we'll be there and get you some more beer. We have 8 beers on draft. We only had 3 today, so there's still a lot more to try.
Thank you, everybody at the Boston Fermentation Festival. We had an amazing time. If you are near Boston, usually it happens in late August. They're planning it already. It's going to be amazing again next year. We hope to see you there next year. Both Mary and I and Rachel, we all came back incredibly inspired and had such a great time. Inspired enough to do some more pickling and Mary's starting to do these classes at Bitter and Esther's, such as September 21st cider class. If you go to bitterandesters.com, you can find out more information about that. Happy fermenting, everybody. I can't wait to be joined by Mary and Rachel next week. Thank you, Heritage Radio Network, and foment about it over here.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening. Wall with no end on the banks of forgiveness. You clutch to your burden.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.